is Steve Heller, and this is a Core 77 broadcast. I first met Brad Holland in 1967. I was just out of high school, and he had just come to New York from Hallmark Cards in Kansas City to become an editorial illustrator. Not in the conventional sense where illustrators mimicked an author's text and picture. Nope. Holland had ideas. He saw himself as a conceptualist in the manner of the early 20th century expressionists and surrealists, and was committed to seeing his ideas published as commentaries that supplemented rather than visually reiterated a text. But I remember how difficult it was for Holland to convince editors and art directors to allow him to freely create visual concepts. Fortunately, however, he was such an amazing draftsman and skilled conceptualist and persuasive advocate for his cause that he earned their respect and attention. He also believed he had nothing to lose. If he couldn't make his illustration his way, he'd find something else to do. His force of will was an inspiration to me back then, and it still is. For the last few years, he's been on another mission, tapping into the same vigor and rigor as when he established himself as an uncompromising illustrator. Only now, he's committed to ensuring that the existing copyright law is not altered in such a way as to erode the rights of artists in this electronic information age. An age, incidentally, where intellectual property is so highly prized that megacorporations seek the exclusive rights to use any art, regardless of creator, for their own profit. As a founding member of the Illustrators Partnership, Holland has become a true expert in copyright legislation. In his role as advocate, he has spoken up for the rights of all artists, and he's been a witness before congressional hearings on the efficacy of retaining strict laws that protect the fundamental intellectual property rights of artists, illustrators, and designers. I caught up with Holland after one of his many exhausting periods of preparation for another legislative battle. We discussed the importance of retaining long-term copyright protection and the reasons why certain groups and industries are fighting to ease, if not altogether abolish, copyright in the United States. Why is copyright so important now?
If you look in the dictionary definitions of copyright, the primary and sometimes the only definition is that it's the exclusive right of the copyright holder. What's interesting in the information age, which is going to replace the manufacturing age, you can tell how important copyrighted material is when you know that Bill Gates and Mark Getty, two of the world's richest men, want to become content providers. And that companies like Google want to provide content for free. Because if Google had to license all the material that they made available, they wouldn't be in business. So for companies like Google, it's important to have as much copyrighted material dumped into the public domain as possible so they can provide access to it without having to pay for it. That's the main reason that there's an issue over copyright right now. One can dispute anything about open sourcing or about how the public domain ought to be free, how there are no such things as authors any longer because every author is influenced and therefore all creative material is somehow a sort of repackaging of the past. That's the postmodernist theory. You can say all you want about that, but in the end, people are going to own copyrights. Getty and Corbis, which began by portraying themselves, Getty is of course owned by Mark Getty and Corbis is owned privately by Bill Gates. Both of these companies went into business portraying themselves as agencies for photographers and artists and others. But both of them are now demanding that people work for them under work-for-hire contracts in which they would own the content and sell it. At the moment, they're selling work at predatory prices because they want to get the market away from the creatives who have hid the market to themselves for the last couple of hundred years.
Let's talk about your mission.
Okay, 2 years ago and a half. The Copyright Office announced a so-called orphan work study. You know yourself because you've produced 100-some books. You know the problem of clearing rights to particularly work in which you can't find an author. The author may have died. The author may have gone into hiding. The author may not know. You may not know how to find the author. You may not even know who the author was, especially if it's visual material. It's been published without any copyright information on it.
The author may have done it as work for hire.
The author may have done it for work for hire, in which case the person for whom they did the work would be the author. If you did a job for the Old Life magazine, for example, the Old Life magazine hasn't existed since, the 1920s or something. I mean, the old Life magazine.
So, getting back to orphan art, what does this mean to the two artists?
With the advent of the internet, the free culture advocates began demanding that all the work of the PAF for artists who had either died or abandoned their copyrights be made available to the public. And they've taken the unique position of American copyright law. Now, American copyright law is quite different from international copyright law, because the American copyright law was instituted before international copyright law and is enshrined in the Constitution. And in the Constitution, copyright was originally meant to protect maps, charts, and graphs, with the idea that this was all public information that should eventually be made available to the public. So if you discovered a new trade route, for example, back in the 1700s, that could be your privileged information only for a period of 14 years, after which your competitors had to have access to it too. That rewarded you for your entrepreneurial activity, but it meant that you couldn't embargo information that could be used for the public good. The idea was that as the years went by, people began adding novels, poetry, ultimately photographs, illustrations, fine art, and so on to the copyright law. And when international copyright law came along with greater protection for the creators, the United States already had its own copyright law in place, and there was no way to really adopt international copyright law. So what happened beginning in 1962 and ending in 1976 was the United States adopted as much of the international copyright law as was beneficial to large corporations so that they could engage in international commerce regarding intellectual property. And this 76 copyright law went into effect, in which artists who previously had to give up their work to the publishers, when you and I started in the business, as you know, the people we did work for owned our copyrights. In 76, that changed. And the default position in copyright was that unless you gave your rights away, anything you did, including all your sketches, you do a sketch, send it to a client, the client doesn't use it, it's still your sketch. You don't have to have your name on it, you don't have to register it with the copyright office. Under the Orphan Works Bill, any sketch that any artist sends to a client would have to be registered with a private registry if they wanted protection. In other words, you just sent me from the New York Times a bunch of things that I had sent you probably 10, 15 years ago. They'd gotten stuck in the bottom of a drawer. Anyone coming into your office, not knowing that I had done that work, could have said, well, this is orphan work, it's now free. Unless I had registered each and every single one of those images, each and every sketch, every page in my notebook, every email, would all have to be registered with the copyright office, because their goal is now to create private registries in which every creator would have to register their work with a private registry for a period of years and then renew those copyrights.
This is chilling. So where does this stand in the law right now?
It was proposed by the Copyright Office in a 127-page report January of last year. It received 1 hour of hearings in the Judiciary Committee, Intellectual Property Subcommittee. Four people testified, three for it, one against. We were told that any group which opposed this bill would be ignored. And then they went into closed-door hearings with Getty and Corbis, one photographer's organization representing the entire creative community. Getty and Corbis do not, of course, represent creators. They represent two of the world's richest men. The bill came out of the Judiciary Committee in May. It was scheduled for swift passage by September. Artist groups got together, largely led by the Illustrators Partnership, which began issuing over 70 articles about it last year. We were able to muster enough opposition that the bill died in the Judiciary Committee last year. We testified against it in the House and in the Senate, where the Senate is now preparing a separate bill. At the moment, the bill was either scheduled to be reintroduced at the moment, or it may be on hold for a year or two. We don't really know. It depends on the will of the House and the Senate.
And who is pushing this? Are these the representatives of the big corporations so that they can control the content without any prescriptions?
We don't actually know who's pushing it. We can name the senators who have introduced the bills, and they're the heads of the Judiciary Committee in the House. There is a legitimate orphan works problem. And it would be nice if that problem could be solved. It could be solved, for example, the way Canada has solved it. Canada has a special Orphan Works Board. If you want to use work in Canada, you appeal to the Orphan Works Board. They research the work. They issue you a license to use that particular work under certain conditions. It's a case-by-case basis. The solution in the United States was simply do away with penalties for copyright infringement in any case where someone can assert an Orphan Works defense. The problem under this law is that anyone can take a name off an artist's work and say, hey, didn't have any name on it. Well, I found it in a drawer. It was in the drawer when I found it. I called around. I couldn't find anybody. So I'm free to use it. If the work is used and I find out about it, which is, of course, the main problem, because infringement can occur any day, any time, any place in the world. I would have to be in that place on that day, on that week, and that month to know that my work had been infringed. Then I would have to track the infringer down. Then I'd have to get them to respond. And if they said, hey, it had no name on it when I found it, then I would have to file a case in federal court. You would have to go to one of those district courts and file a case against this infringer, drag the infringer into court, and then what would happen? You would be entitled to no more than the infringer normally pays for orphan work that he uses in that situation.
It could be a dollar if they're
It could be $5. It could be 50 cents. It could be free, depending on whether you pay anything for orphan work. You cannot get your attorney's fees. You cannot get damages in return for taking the guy to court. So how are you going to get a lawyer if there's nothing in it for the lawyer, if in case the guy can assert a successful orphan works defense?
What are the long-term ramifications of this? There was a famous case once where R. Crumb lost the keep on truck in Character, mm-hmm. which has been reprinted over and over and over again.
Right.
Obviously, lots of royalties were lost.
Right.
If there is this law on the books, what happens to you as an artist?
First of all, the law would act as an international copyright virus. That's the key issue right here. What it would mean is that the minute you do work, any sketch in a sketchbook, I mean, if you have a 25-page sketchbook or a 1,000-page sketchbook, you would technically have to register each sketch with a private registry and then maintain that copyright. If the registry only registers it for one proposal was for 14 years, one proposal was for 5 years. And you would have to register it with every registry that someone might use. For example, there might be 50 registries pop up around the world that are competing for this glut of people who are now going to have to register their copyrights if they want protection.
But what I don't understand is it just adds so much bureaucracy into this system. Why would anybody in their right mind accept it, other than those who run the registries and can get some money out of it?
Google has already given $2 million to Stanford to aid in the prosecution of cases, such as the Prelinger case, to try to undo this in the courts.
And what is the Prelinger case?
The Prelinger Archive took a case to, well, ultimately went to the Supreme Court 2 years ago. It would have allowed them to use orphaned work material. So next the thing went to the legislature with the idea of revising the American Copyright Code. When we testified at the Senate, I said our main objection to the Orphan Works Amendment is that it's not an Orphan Works Amendment. It's a blueprint for a radically new copyright law, which would serve as a copyright virus and undo international copyright. For example, take André Cartier-Bresson, who died, 3 years ago, 2 years ago. Under international law, under the Berne Convention, if he died 3 years ago, his work would be protected for another 47 years. Under the EU and under the current American law, his work would be protected for another 67 years. Under the Orphan Works Amendment, it could be royalty-free by the end of the year. All some goofball would have to say, hey, it didn't have any name on it. It's just a photograph of, you know, two kids walking on their hands. Anybody could have taken it.
What's more, if his work goes out of copyright in 47 years, somebody could buy up that copyright.
Yes.
Or does it stay in public domain?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So in theory, I mean, there are abuses to current copyright law. There's no question about that. One could argue that the Disney Corporation has abused it. Even Steve Jobs, who has, you know, virtually saved Disney with Pixar, even Steve Jobs is arguing that copyright is obsolete. Disney's on both sides of the fence there if you follow all the connections.
Well, in the obsolete camp, there's an awful lot that needs to be documented. I mean, as you say, I do this all the time with my books. And I find that to do a history, given the limited funds I'm given to do a book, I can't go through all of those rights.
Actually, much of what you use is probably fair use.
It is fair use, but there are times when it's not. I mean, I've been sued by somebody I used a piece of work from in a book that made absolutely no money. And in fact, I took absolutely no money for it. It was an anti-war book.
Right.
And the lawyer insisted that, indeed, this was a broach of copyright.
Sure.
And we made a deal ultimately. And ultimately, I learned, as you described, that all I had to do was pay $5 because it was the market value given my particular project.
Right.
But It took time, energy, and and another lawyer.
As we said in our submission to the Copyright Office, we recognize that there are abuses. One of the people arguing against in favor of the bill was Walmart. Walmart was arguing that people who find photos of grandma in the attic can't have them duplicated at Walmart because there might be a copyright violation. Well, give me a break. First of all, I was grateful to find there's something Walmart can't go in business doing. I mean, that I thought was worth it just for that. Secondly, is there a city in the United States where a photographer won't duplicate, you know, photo of grandma? Who's going to come out of the closet and say, "Hey, I took a picture of that old lady that you've got, you know, with, you know, framed on your wall"?
Well, those are the absurdities, but there's also the Kinko's Law, which seems relatively valid. However, the registries have made it so difficult. If you want to give some work over, say, I want to give an article or you want to give a drawing for educational purposes to a textbook, they still have to come get you. You have to sign something. Even if you're saying, I don't want to take payment for it, there's still all this red tape.
But it is red tape, but the burden that will be shifted from the user to the creator is impossible, because you know that you want to use a limited number of photographs in a book. If you can't find the owner of a book, or if you ascertain that it wouldn't be fair use, you're stuck. You have to find another photograph. You have to do without it. You have to commission something. I recognize the problem. We all do. By shifting the burden to the copyright owner, the creator, it's an impossible burden to ever meet. Because, as I said, every single sketch that I have ever done, thousands and thousands of pictures, I would now have to maintain thousands of copyrights, maintain the expiration dates of thousands of copyrights, refile all of them on the proper date, or any one of them is fair game. Anytime I do a picture in a sketchbook, I have to rush home, you know, file my $35 or $45, depending on whether I do it online or by mail, and register it. Theoretically, anytime you send an email, right now you enjoy the passive protection of copyright law every time you send an email. Under copyright law, anyone who can't locate you could use one of your emails, one of your home movies.
Okay, in terms of the greater good, and laws are supposedly passed for the greater good, what's the upside and what's the downside of copyright change?
Copyright is going to change one way or another. You asked a few minutes ago who would benefit from this. Google has already said they plan to use orphan works in the millions of works range. They said that it's on the Copyright Office website. They said it at the Copyright Office roundtables that we participated in 2 years ago next month. So we know who's going to benefit from it. What the United States needs is some exemption, for example. You could write a very specific exemption. Danish law, for example, has an exemption for family photos. I can take any family photo down and have it duplicated. There can be an exemption made for genealogical research. There is already an exemption for fair use. You can write specific laws that would benefit the public domain. The ironic thing about this is that if this work has to be registered with a copyright, the very people who did work for the last 30 years in the United States under the 76 Copyright Act will have to register everything they did under the existing law to be protected under a new law that says, oh, we were just kidding for the last 30 years. You may have abided by the law for the last 30 years, but now we've changed the law, so everything you did when we said you didn't have to put your name on it, you didn't have to register it, now you do.
What is the bottom line for you?
The bottom line is this bill needs to be defeated as is, and the United States needs to work with the rest of the countries in creating a law that would benefit users of copyrighted information who can clear work in a responsible, reliable way. For example, we proposed in 2001 a voluntary registry to be funded by artist reprographic money, which is right now not being returned to artists at all. A lot of this money is being escrowed overseas. We don't know how much, but we know that there are, over the last decade, several million dollars has been escrowed or it's totally disappeared that should have been going to illustrators alone. If you include photographers and illustrators, then we're talking about tens of millions.
This money is in payment for what?
The money is blanket licensing. It's the equivalent of jukebox money for the Rolling Stone or Ice Cube or somebody. It's money that can't be earmarked for specific individuals, but should be returned to the general profession. Our proposal was to use this money to create a voluntary registry that could be maintained by illustrators. We made the proposal at the second Illustrators Conference in 2001. It was opposed by the Graphic Artists Guild because we discovered later they were already taking some of that money. We put 12 illustrators organizations together, including the Guild of Natural Science Illustrators, Medical Illustrators, Aviation Artists, the National Cartoonist Society. We organized the 12 major illustrators organizations, and any others who want to join are eligible to join this coalition. And the idea was that we would petition for the use of this money from overseas. A lot of it's being escrowed overseas because they know if it's returned to the Copyright Clearance Center in the United States, it'll never get to the artists. And so the foreign countries trying to behave responsibly have escrowed the money until the United States creates a responsible mechanism for returning it to rights holders.
So you were trying to set up a mechanism that would
We contacted an organization called Identity Commons Accordance, and they supplied us with information about how we could embed artists' work with persistent identity tags, which would contain contractual information about the work, contact information, and would all be embedded as metadata, so that anytime your work was used, it would call home and say, hey, I'm being used over here.
As long as it's used digitally.
As long as the identity tag hasn't been removed, which is, of course, another problem. But publishers have already embedded over 10 million persistent identity tags, I think they have a different name for it, digital object identifiers, in published work. Publishers are already doing this. What we were proposing was a copyright bank in which artists could pool their copyrights. The copyright bank could then embed the work with a persistent identity tag, which could then follow the work along with the metadata containing all the contractual information, so that whenever anyone wanted to use the work, there would be no orphan works problem, because you would know exactly who to call and who to ask for information from. This could be embedded into the work when it was published. So the work would then go into a compilation through the Copyright Clearance Center. The compilation could then say, so many pictures have been reproduced for so-and-so, so many pictures have been reproduced for so-and-so, that money could be returned to the proper
Okay, order. So this sounds all very, very logical and useful for all artists. And it's already being done. Why isn't it being done here? What's the roadblock?
The roadblock is bringing all the groups together and setting up the mechanism and then getting compliance from the Copyright Clearance Center. You know, I don't want to start practicing law without a license, and I've been practicing art without a license long enough. When we started this, I couldn't have told you anything of what I've just told you. I didn't know any of this a few years ago. We found out about it from an attorney named Bruce Lehman, who was keynote speaker at the first Illustrators Conference that we created back in 2001. Bruce was the first person to explain any of this to us. When we went to our first international conference in Singapore, which was 2003, Bruce came with us. And Bruce was the key author of the 1976 Copyright Act. He was the author of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. So he's one of the main players in the whole copyright business. This should have been done 20 years ago, 30 years ago, actually, when the copyright law went into effect. And it's a great mistake that the people who were leaders in this business 30 years ago didn't take that step. This is similar to what songwriters have done with ASCAP, and it's way overdue. ASCAP's been around for 90 years now. The French collecting societies have been doing it since Victor Hugo. Victor Hugo was one of the creators of this whole mechanism back in the 1850s in France, and ASCAP was modeled on that for songwriters. I proposed it back in the 1970s for illustrators, and nobody knew what I was talking about, and I began to wonder if I did. So it wasn't until we began to get everybody together in 2001 that we thought there was a chance to go forward. So what we need to do now, having educated ourselves, is to finish the task of bringing all the creative groups together. We've got 12 major illustrators organizations together. We haven't missed many. We would like to get designers involved because designers have different copyright issues. If I design a logo for an airline, I probably don't own the logo. The airline would. If I work for a design firm, I probably don't own the copyrights that I create. I create them for my employer, who may in turn sell them for, I would hope, a considerable fee to his clients.
Well, also, designers may put into their contracts that if something's reused once, twice, three times, they get extra money for it, but it's not about copyright.
That's the equivalent of residuals in act, which is why actors don't have an ASCAP, because actors are essentially employees. Songwriters are entrepreneurs. And as designers become entrepreneurs, as illustrators become popular artists, they're going to need to maintain control of their work. They got to get over this idea that they are always producing for somebody else. and the goal of artists. I mean, art's been going on for millions of years, well, at least tens of thousands of years that we know of. It's not going to stop just because somebody's invented a new technology. The question is whether you want to hang on to your work or not. That's the question. So we would like to get designers involved. We've done most of the groundwork already. We would just welcome the support of designers who want to be entrepreneurs.
Is there any light at the end of this tunnel?
There's a light, all right. Question is what color the light is. It could be red, but we're going to try to make it green. Copyright, in a sense, boils down to property. So what we're talking about is a defining moment in the history of copyright. If you've never been interested in copyright law before, as I never was, this is the time to start, because the laws that are changed right now are going to affect the way work is created over the next 100, 200 years. If we miss this opportunity now, it's not going to come back. People who take our rights now are not going to come back and say, hey, would you like your rights back, you know, 10 years from now, 20 years in the future? Artists are going to be doing work under work-for-hire contracts for Mark Getty and Bill Gates if we don't look out. So the question is, everybody should get together right now and work together to find a mechanism that would allow them to put their work out where they could be contacted, where they can be asked by publishers who want to republish their work, what they want for it. If that's done, then we have an orderly process in which work can be tracked. The orphan works problem will automatically go away because work can be done. This is a defining moment in the history of copyright, but because of the place of intellectual property in Western culture, it defines the work of Shakespeare, Delacroix, Picasso. Because of the role of copyright in modern society, this is a defining moment in the history of private property.
That was Brad Holland, and this is Steve Heller with the Core 77 broadcast.